This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Bridget Toomey of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, reporting on Iraq and voting and a positive direction. Bridget, a very good evening to you. I understand there's always the twist, but a vote is a positive thing. What do we know so far about the voting and the protecting of the voting? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, the Iraqis did vote in the parliamentary elections last week. So the results have come out, the preliminary results, and we're expecting to see final results soon. The final results shouldn't hold big differences, but they just formalize what the preliminary results say. So about 56% of eligible voters turned out, which was higher than expected. And the unfortunate news is the Shiite parties close to Tehran performed rather well in this election. It looks like the Shiite parties might even have enough seats in parliament to surpass the majority needed to form a government if they can manage to hold together. The coordination framework, which has been the Shiite coalition ruling this past government, has had some infighting, but they're in discussions about government formation, and they and Tehran would both likely hope for them to be able to come together and form another Shiite-led government that is, open to working with Tehran.
You indicate that there are doubts about the vote, whether it's honest, whether it's straightforward, whether it's trustworthy, whether it produces results. How widespread are those doubts? I understand intellectuals would speak out. The taxi driver is unhappy.
Yeah, the average people in Iraq generally have felt that these elections don't actually affect much change, that instead there's a kind of prolonged government formation process. Last election, it took about a year, in which there are a lot of, backroom negotiations going on, deals struck amongst the elites. And so many Iraqis feel that this is actually where decisions are made, not in the ballots.
The Prime Minister, Mohammed Shia al-Sudani, is he given credit for the vote coming off at all, or have they raised the bar for what his success looks like?
I think the bar has been a little bit raised for success. He's been, he's given credit for the election. He's been given credit in, as we can see in his strong performance. I think people are crediting him with some of the stability in Iraq in recent years. It turned out well for his party, and we'll see how that will play out in his attempt to retain the prime minister's position.
In the voting 20 years ago, it's that long, Bridget, 20 years ago, the voting looked, what voting there was, looked to be based pretty much on who your team was. You voted for your team, the Shia, the Sunni, the Mahdi, the Mahdists, the Twelvers, the Seveners. Is that still going on, everybody dividing up by tribal identification?
Yes, votes are largely still sectarian now. You'll see the Shia, Sunnis, and Kurds perform well in the areas where they have large, the majority of the population or large segments of the population.
Well, then let's ask about the Sunnis, because my memory goes back to the war fighting. This might be old news, but the Sunnis were often resentful of the central government dominated by the Shias and didn't vote as much as they did in the eastern part of the country. Is that still going on? Is the Sunni vote light, especially out in the wastelands?
The Sunnis turned out in this election. They rallied behind one of their the former speaker of the Council of Representatives, and his party did very well. By some accounts, the preliminary reports, some reporting disagreed a little bit, but his party seemed to be one of the leading parties overall, and that was the main Sunni party. So they're turning out to vote for Sunni leadership.
All right, I'll call this a success. I won't look for any weaknesses anymore because we have Yemen. We always have Yemen, Bridget. Mm-hmm. They've arrested members of a, quote, Saudi-American-Israeli spy ring. Is this new for for the Houthis to bring out a formal report like this, including a wiring diagram? Is this something new?
This isn't new per se. The Houthis are putting a lot of energy behind this this recent arrest. But if we go back a couple months to the end of August, Israel managed to kill most of their government, and as we're finding out, including important military leaders. So recently, they've been increasingly paranoid, very concerned about intelligence infiltration. And so now they're leading these arrest campaigns, claiming to have identified and arrested espionage rings, kind of as a way to signal to their people that, or the people that they control, that they're in charge and they're, you know, maybe resolving whatever issues led to the ability of Israel to target a sensitive meeting.
The arrests, they're widespread. Do we have any more? Is there any transparency about what the arrested have said or what their friends have said or what their fate will be?
So there have been a lot of arrests in recent months. The I would say one of the early waves along with this about in the trend of this espionage ring was UN workers. They in total hold 59 UN workers right now. A little over 40 are on trial for espionage, and 21 the Houthis have requested, the prosecutors requested the death sentence for. So many of these arrests, including the supposed Saudi cell, include confessions from the alleged spies, but it's hard to verify that these are genuine confessions, or are they, you know, coerced by the Houthis in some way?
Yes, a confession from an alleged spy is a different category of reporting, because they always admit to wild schemes. I love the one where they put cameras on the vehicles, and I guess they drove around and photographed locations of rockets and individuals. That's an allegation that's confessed in one of the victims. But if we were that good, they wouldn't have been continuing their barrage these many months, unconquered as far as I can see. So who's the audience for this? Is it the Yemeni government? Is it the people of Yemen? Is it their enemies in Iran or their friends in Iran? Who's the audience for such a wide net being cast and bragged about?
Some of the audience is certainly domestic, both to scare any potential, any Yemenis that may be thinking about cooperating with Western intelligence or Saudi intelligence if they had access to that, because they certainly have dissent in the territory that they control and they're worried about it. And it's likely a signal to the West, to Israel, to Saudi Arabia, who would like to penetrate Houthi-controlled territory, that they're not, they're cracking down, that they're not messing around.
I can see that. And the arrests, the Houthis are headquartered, or their headquarters is the capital, Sana'a. Were the arrests in Sana'a? Do we know where they took place, or throughout the country?
The arrests, I'm not certain where the arrests took place. They're alleging that the spies were acting in Sana'a, that amongst other places. But these spies that they've targeted, they were saying they were photographing actually largely residential areas or areas in Sana'a that are sensitive targets for the Houthis. Things like the villa that was struck by Israel when the government was meeting.
So the Houthis have enemies, and they claim that the United... I see the United Kingdom is ringed in on this. Are they also accused?
The Houthis will lump all Western right. countries in together, and the UK has engaged in airstrikes against them. Though their focus is generally this Saudi Arabia-Israel-American alleged, you know, alliance, because these are the main enemies that they confront.
Bridget Toomey, a research analyst for the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, watching the positive news out of Baghdad and the mysterious, impenetrable news out of Sana'a. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,